passion, drive, and patience. What brings home the winning trophy is also what keeps your ride or die alive. eBay Motors has everything you need to maintain your vehicle and level it up to peak performance. From superchargers, roof racks, exhaust kits, LED lights, and more, whether you're into speed, power, or style, eBay Motors has you covered. With over 122 million parts for your number one ride or die, you'll always find exactly what you're looking for. And with eBay Guaranteed Fit, your part is guaranteed to fit your ride every time or your money back. Because with eBay Motors, you're burning rubber, not cash. With all the parts you need at the prices you want, it's easy to turn your car into the MVP and bring home that win. Keep your ride or die alive at ebaymotors.com. Eligible items only. Exclusions apply.
We want the dynamite from the post-wrestling site. AEW, lighting up the fuse. Sit back and enjoy the bubbly. As we hear from John and Waitay. Where we're going, we don't need roads. And if the buck stops here, this thing might blow. Everything you hear, opinions of the show. And if you don't like it, go to the forums and let them know.
Hello, everyone, and welcome to Rewind to Dynamite. John Pollock and Wei Ting are here with you on a Wednesday night following tonight's episode from Des Moines, Iowa.
Des Moines, that's right. Yeah, have you ever tasted the corn from Des Moines?
I never thought that we would be breaking down pH levels in compost, but first thing for everything on professional wrestling tonight when we talked about corn harvesting in Des Moines.
A pipe bomb on the soil in Des Moines, a first.
Yes, we will get into that segment with TV time with Chris Jericho. But how are you, Wei?
Doing well. Yeah, not so bad. How have you been?
Good to hear. I've been great.
Not sick. I think your voice sounds great.
So this is the annoying part, is that I have had this lingering illness since for about a month now, and it just got to awful levels last week, as people had to struggle through listening to my voice could probably detect it. And I'm just tapping out at this point. And Monday, I finally decide I'm making a doctor's appointment to figure out what is going on with me. And I make this doctor's appointment, and the progression I've had in the last like 3 days has been the most significant of the past month. Like, I'm feeling as good as I have been. So I have this appointment tomorrow, and I have to go in and I feel I should amplify it a little. I was like, I'm doing okay now, but I know this is going to come back and attack me. But overall, I've been good the last few days. So
good, good. Well, nature kind of seems to have done most of the work.
This is how healthcare works in Canada, folks. I'm going to go as a precautionary measure. I've got to do that tomorrow. I got to take my son to the dentist. That's my day. That's my exciting day. And then I chat with Wei, but that's an everyday occurrence.
It's all enjoyable, whether or not you have to go to the your kid's dentist or talking to me. I mean, you know, all the good stuff to be able to discuss on the, I don't know what I'm trying to say. You have a very normal day tomorrow. I have nothing to really say about it.
What Wei is trying to say is that July the 6th is not going to be any normal day. It is going to be one of the greatest in the history of post-wrestling and Poison Rana, because we are presenting the cash-in at Yuck Yucks, 224 Richmond Street West, where we are assembling some of the power players of the post and Poison Rana communities. We are going to have wrestling-themed improv. Will John Pollock dust off a little yes and on this particular day? Find out on July the 6th. We are going to have wrestling karaoke. I will promise you I will not be engaging in such a activity, but Wei just might get up there and start singing Rikishi's Put a Little Ass on It. We will also have trivia, different games, but kicking things off at 2 p.m., we have assembled the wrestling media panel of myself, Wei Ting, Stephanie Chase, Brandon Thurston, and all the way coming via airplane to Toronto, Benno, live at Yuck Yucks. We are going to be chatting all about what we do for a living. It is going to be the most, we are just going to talk about ourselves, and hopefully you will have plenty of questions for us, but we have a lot of topics. I'm looking forward to this. People that I am looking forward to doing this panel with since we announced it on Monday.
I'm looking forward to just having a simple conversation I don't know if this is necessarily meant to be like any sort of definitive state of the wrestling media address. We just needed like, a title.
This is going down in history. Like, what is said in these 60 minutes will forever be put down in permanent ink. We will define where media is going, not just wrestling media, all of media. We're going to figure out the NBA rights, the future of streaming. Everything will be finished and concluded after this hour.
The definitive conversation on all of media will take place at the cash-in. I've had some queries about whether or not this will be streamed. No plans to stream this as yet. Whether or not we'll record it for the future, I maybe we'll consider that. But it will certainly, we don't have the capabilities to stream it live. I guess we all do. We could just put up a phone and stream it, but we don't necessarily plan to. So
right now it's a live event only. So the only way, and I don't foresee us streaming this. So this will be a live event. So your best bet, if you're in Toronto, to buy a ticket at postwrestling.com/live. And then after the panel, we'll be doing all the other stuff. We'll be hanging out. So I hope to chat with all of you if you are coming up or stopping by Yuck Yuck. So 224 Richmond Street West, and might have some other people dropping by as well. So so keep your ears glued to our shows over the next few weeks. Find out who is coming. Who have we coaxed into showing up at Yuck Yucks? I mean, Wei Ting is going to be there. That alone, it's a big
deal. I'll think about it. Not so sure yet. Might be busy that day. Might have a dentist appointment.
Okay, well, it is a Saturday, so plan ahead, folks. All right. Also, want to make note of Ask Away, the mailbag show, coming up on Thursday. This is your last call to get your questions in. We already have a bunch of great ones this month, as I have been sampling and reading over some of the questions. But you can send them at forum.postwrestling.com. There is an Ask Away ongoing thread in there. Just submit your question. We will definitely get to it on Thursday's show, provided you submit it in time. Or if you want us to hear your question, you can simply go to memo.fm/postwrestling. All you have to do is hit record, send in your question. Don't make it a 15-minute book on tape.
I actually don't think you can. I think you might be cut off at like 2 minutes or something.
Okay, so. Well, there you go. It caps at 2 minutes. So I think you can get your question in 2 minutes, and we will play it and answer it live right on the show. So that will be out for all Post Wrestling Cafe members on Friday, coming your way. But we also have MCU Later tackling X-Men, The Last Stand.
Did you? You did. You did watch it. And you actually enjoyed it.
I did watch it. This is like the one-night stand of X-Men.
No, it is not.
No, it's not. It isn't.
It is more like the December to Dismember of X-Men.
I don't feel the need to be that guy that is going to over-defend this film. But I watched it, and I felt it was... felt it was fine.
Maybe I'm extra harsh on it, you know, but the only
how much is the handling of Cyclops a big issue with people in this film? Is that one of the issues, or like,
yeah, I would say it was probably an issue throughout the entire series.
He is handled terribly in these three films altogether, but I have no attachment to this character, but I can understand, like, he is a non-factor in this film, so I can absolutely understand that being one key part, but that doesn't really have any effect on me.
Honestly, my outrage for it probably comes more from my attachment to like the existing material, which I mean, this thing completely deviated from. But really, our opinion does not matter. The only opinions that matter are that of WH Park and Rich Fan. What did they think? Maybe they liked it. Maybe they did not.
Yeah, well, I actually, they're recording it right now. And you know what? If we just check in, let's see if we can hear W.H. Park
in the other
rap, 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 man. Let me tell you about this fucking movie. Okay. X-Men, The Last Stand. I don't want to swear anymore, but that's our preview of W.H. Park.
Okay.
That's a poor
I mean, I'm sure, it'll be something like that. Yeah.
Well, I look forward to hearing their thoughts on that. That will be out on Thursday on the cafe, so look out for that. And then it's Wei and Neil on Clash at the Castle duty this coming Saturday.
You have a very important evening. Unfortunately, you can't make it, but I think it's for good reason.
It is, yes. And we did mention on the show that Lucas Sharpio is going to be representing both Post Wrestling and WrestleNomics at Clash at the Castle in Glasgow, Scotland this coming weekend. He will be there on the ground. He will be at the show attending the post-show press conference as well. So Lucas will be there, and he will be on with Brandon and I next week on the show. He's also going to have some written content for both of our sites over the next couple of days. So look out for that, both before and after Clash at the Castle.
Very, very excited about that. So glad to have Lucas a part of both us and WrestleNomics.
And the last plug is Sunday night, 8 p.m. Eastern time, the NWA podcast. I will promote the start time. I'm not going to guess the end time. We just put up our hands and they just go. They are coming off their world record. We will see if that is defeated this coming Sunday. But Nate Milton, Chris Ely, Andrew Thompson, and Two-Way Ray coming.
I think so I've been assured that they will not.
That means nothing. That's like the Jerry McDivitt argument that when you state that someone is not going to be showing up, that's code for they are showing up in wrestler terms. I have always been told that there is no way we are going past this hour. We will see. Okay. When they get going, these are like jazz musicians. Okay, folks, you can't just limit them to the sheet of music. They have to just feel and go.
I don't think I've spoken to any human being for more than 6 hours. Like I don't find anybody interesting enough to talk to for that long. But clearly I could listen to these guys for 6 hours, and that's because their conversation does actually tend to be that interesting. So whether or not they go three, whether they go six, whether they go seven, whether they go 10 hours, I don't care. I'll probably listen to it all.
The new standard will be when I wake up early on a Monday morning and it's still going. One day that will happen. Maybe. Okay. Mm. So there you go. All of that happening at postwrestling.com.
Hey, last thing here. Those of you looking for our Who Killed WCW review, you can actually find it right now. Stop listening to the show. I don't care. Go and sign up for the Post Wrestling Cafe so you can listen to our thoughts on Who Killed WCW Episode 2, talking about the finger poke of doom, the end of Goldberg's streak, Bret Hart's career being ended by Goldberg himself. Lots and lots and lots to discuss. John, I went about 50 minutes talking about this episode.
Yeah, there was a lot to get to in this. I would say, really, we're talking about a window of like 6 to 8 months that they're covering in 1998 through early 99. But there's so much that happens in this period. And guys, pack a lunch because I brought some stats with me on this show. So we go through some numbers as well. I know that's everyone's favorite. So yes, episode 2 up now for everybody with the double shot, which we will continue the next 2 weeks throughout the duration of Who Killed WCW. All right. Not a whole lot of news. We covered pretty much all of it on Pollock and Thurston today, but just a few quick updates ratings-wise, starting with Raw on Monday, drawing 1,609,000 viewers and a 0.50 in the demo. So they were still first on cable. This was not going against any NBA, but they were against the Stanley Cup final between the Florida Panthers and the Edmonton Oilers. So Raw was down 4% in viewership, down 7% in the demo, and the Stanley Cup final doing over 3.5 million viewers. There was also a college basketball game. They were hurt much more in Canada going against the Stanley Cup than they were in the U.S. Not a big number for Raw, but I mean, outside of if the NBA finals extends, there would be a game next Monday if they force a game 5. But thus far, the Celtics are up 2-0, and by the time this show is over, we will know the outcome of game 3. So it could be 4-0 for the Celtics. I don't know how well it is going to fare for the Dallas Mavericks. I know you're really rooting for the Mavericks, but I don't know about it.
I'm watching you on a second screen right now. I'm barely paying attention to you.
And then NXT on Tuesday, starring Cody Rhodes, who just showed up to say, "Hey guys, remember me? Remember all these guys I used to work with in AEW?" 718,000 viewers and a 0.22 in the demo. So this was amazing. So among sports programming, I think this was all of cable. They were first on cable with a 0.22. And again, like, for anyone who's following this for several years, the idea that you could win the night on cable with a 0.22, it's really astounding where these numbers are. The second highest number on cable, a 0.10, okay? Dude, there was nobody. Wow. There was nothing happening last night. We haven't seen the quarters yet. I'm sure that Cody's segment did well, but overall, it did not spike the number. the demo was identical to last week, and the audience was actually down 7% from last week. Still a healthy number, still wins the night for them. But I mean, we will see. Dynamite did a 0.28 last week, and even with the NBA competition tonight, I have a hard time imagining they're going to fall below a 0.22. I'm fairly certain that Dynamite will squeak by this week. But this was an interesting week to look at because AEW was up against it, and NXT was coming off, you know, these past 2 weeks and putting Cody on the show. And they did, you know, by their standards, this is still a good number. Like, this would continue the streak of, you know, very good numbers. And again, they were first on cable for the night, but not getting the a bigger boost above that. So we will see what Dynamite does. For all we know, they'll come in and they'll do a 0.10 for all we know. And that is not going to happen, but we will see. TV ratings are very hard to predict.
I'll say. Yeah.
All right. We're going to transfer over to Dynamite tonight. Again, from Des Moines at the Wells Fargo Arena. Did you see this tweet from Koshe Erbe, the head of live events at AEW, after the show in Council Bluffs, Iowa? This was on Saturday night, and thanked the people and the town of Council Bluffs. But when it came to the actual arena, he called it subpar venue that we ran. He was not too happy with the venue. And then you had someone in the comments saying, "Did you mean to write superb?" And if you scroll down here, his reply, you thought there was a spelling mistake and he meant to write superb, his response was, "I said what I said."
He was
doubling down here. So there was no spell check error here. But again, talked about this today on the show. But I mean, this is your head of live events. And I mean, this had to have been just a dump of an arena that they dealt with, or just personnel that was not great. I don't know, because you don't often see people in these positions just like dump on an arena.
It must have been something pretty bad. I would just say, in terms of
it's worth saying, subpar venue partner. He's not actually knocking the physical.
He's not talking
itself.
About the crowd. He's talking about the organization.
No, I wasn't saying the crowd. I was saying like the amenities maybe at the building. But subpar venue partner would suggest the people they were working with.
Yeah. This feels a little extreme, honestly, to me. You know, to kind of go out of your way to tweet that you had a bad experience with the venue partner. We have no idea really what might have occurred.
When do we see that? And
never.
Like, we follow UFC and WWE. It's like, if there were industries that would have like a track record of this, these are the industries.
Like, what did they do to you to warrant a tweet like this? I don't know, but you know, that's something for maybe you and Brandon to find out.
Okay, we'll get to the bottom of it with Koshe Erbe. Well, tonight, the Wells Fargo Arena. We will await if there's any tweets tonight, whether this venue got a pass or a fail. WrestleTix reporting 2,854 tickets distributed. So, I mean, we had this discussion routinely, but that, you know, nothing is spiking attendance at the moment for TVs. Swerve Strickland and Prince Nana start the show, and Swerve previews the match with Will Ospreay, noting, "There is only one killer in that ring," and he told Will Ospreay 10 years ago that once you developed a killer instinct, you would be impossible to stop. "And I saw an assassin that got the job done against Kenny Omega last year, and then I saw an assassin tear it down with Takeshita, and an assassin at Dynasty with Danielson, but not so at Double or Nothing with Roderick Strong." And he says, "I am not a target you want to hesitate on. They call me Killshot because if you won't pull the trigger, I will. I respect you, Will, and you're a fighting champion, unlike some of the EVPs." And with that, the Elite came out. But the first half of this promo, I thought Swerve, like, he's cutting these tremendous promos. And we definitely saw this shift around a month ago where you were hearing the reaction of this guy really just abandoning a lot of the edge on his character. And he is, I think, really fortified that aspect of things, both in this and bookending the show at the end with Will tonight, too.
I think so, too. I mean, it's really hard when our comparison point is a guy who, you know, kidnaps or at least threatens to kidnap children. Like, he can't exactly do that as a babyface champion. maybe it'll get to that point. He's had to find other ways to just appear mean and to create a bit of edge. And I think he's, like, really trying hard to do that by acting a bit more aggressive in these promos, a bit more angry. And I think it's really working out for him.
I think it's what the people want. They view this as like the authentic Swerve. And I think that is what they want. And this is certainly feels like a more real version of him than really what was like a week or two period that you were just seeing less of this.
Maybe more than authentic. Like it feels like a more interesting character. Whereas the sort of your good guy champion without much of a flamboyant, loud personality was a little bit harder to define. This is somebody that actually feels like a unique character.
So the elite come out where we just hear Okada. Whose house? It's my house, bitch. And this is all of Okada's like role at the moment. It's just for him to say things in a funny manner.
Yeah. Mm-hmm. And there's nothing wrong with that. Like you're not getting, I don't want to hear a 10-minute promo from Okada. Like, and the alternative would be maybe Takeshita, who doesn't speak at all. I think they've found a great way to kind of give him presence, give him a voice, let him make people laugh, using, you know, like one-liners and just like, letting the wrestling do the rest.
Well, Nick takes over and he talks about how they have taken out half of the roster, including Omega, Kingston, like, and they destroyed Team AEW at Double or Nothing and said that all the trolls and the bots, they still doubt us. And the guys in the back don't think we're violent enough. So we are challenging AEW's best to the most violent match, blood and guts. And Matt then pitches to Swerve Strickland, stating, you're a champion just like us. And do you want to stand with champions like us and be our fifth man in blood and guts? And to seal the deal, they offer him one of their limited, very limited edition Reebok pumps.
What do you mean very limited? Have these sold out?
They said they're sold out. Yeah.
Oh, wow.
So these are collector's items now.
Did you get yours?
I ordered them and they would not cross the border.
Didn't have your size, I bet.
No, I don't wear size 9s either. Neither does Swerve. He also points out Matt Jackson, who's wearing a pearl necklace, by the way. And Nana then notes how, well, Swerve says he's a philanthropist. And with that, Nana tosses the shoes into the crowd. And Matt says that the injury bug has just landed on you, Swerve. But before they can attack, the Acclaimed come out, and Daddy Ass is not going to let anything happen to Swerve Strickland. And they run out, clear the ring, and Christopher Daniels says, hey, unlike Adam Pearce, I've got a full show booked here. We don't have any wiggle room, so you guys got to get out of this ring because Jack Perry's got a match right now. Mm-hmm. He basically said, like, we don't have time for this on the show. There's too much stuff booked.
Yeah, yeah. I've been pretty neutral in the whole Chris Daniels, you know, interim GM, whatever his title is, the thing that's been going on. Like, it seems to be maybe a role that's convenient for them to, like, carry certain storylines across. Like, that I'm okay with. As long as it's not abused and used as a crutch, like, I think these types of roles have been all these years on WWE TV. I thought tonight, like, he didn't really serve much of a purpose for this segment. I mean, did we really need a Daniels appearance for him to just come out and say, you guys are going on for too long. Get out of the ring. So we get off my lawn so I can get on with the show. Like, I didn't think that was necessary. And I kind of just felt like any sort of interruption like that made this entire thing feel that much faker and not something I could really suspend my disbelief in.
Yeah, I haven't been enjoying Daniels in this role. He feels it's like he just feels like he's like the middle management underling. That's what he feels like. He doesn't really command the authority that even an Adam Pearce or a Nick Aldis do. He feels like he is like this henchman and that's like auditioning for the job.
I don't think he's being written well. And I don't really think the promo he cut tonight was very well.
Yeah, from a guy that's a great promo. Like, these are not... Like,
well, here's the thing. Like, it might have been an okay wrestling promo, but he should not be cutting pro wrestling-like promos. Like, he still seems to be very
much... He can talk, like, naturally. He just feels so, I don't know, erratic.
I think a role like this requires somebody to speak with authority, but, like, tonight he almost cut a pro wrestling promo, complete with, like, you know, he was, like, turned to the side, almost like, you know, like he used to do as, like, a fallen angel. And he delivered, like, a wrestling promo... when you're really just supposed to be delivering the news.
Maybe Koshe Erbe should be in this role.
If you're a heel promo is what you're looking for.
He should be the spokesman for the elite.
Sure.
Yeah. Hello, subpar council bluffs.
I said what I said.
Just call me Legend. The match is the TNT qualifier with Jack Perry against Dustin Rhodes. Winner advances to the ladder match. And we got Jack Perry taking the Taiji Ishimori role here, where he takes off the turnbuckle pad early in the match, and then you're supposed to forget about it, and it will play into things later. Well, Perry first sends Rhodes into the post and then the steps, and somewhere along the way, Dustin Rhodes needed a blood transfusion because he's bloody within a minute of this match. And then Perry exposes the floor, but it's Perry taking the back body drop onto the cement. And in the middle of this, Jack Perry starts going for something in his boot. And it's an uncomfortable amount of time that he is digging for something in his boot. The announcers are like, he's trying to get something. And then he stops. And then he gets back into the ring. And again, he's going for this in his boot. And did anything come out of this? There was no loaded boot. There was no gimmick like where he gave a kick and the boot was loaded. He never brought a weapon out. I don't know what was going on here.
It never paid off. And I have to assume that he
was something like really lodged in there that he couldn't get out.
No, I'm assuming he just abandoned the spot. Yeah, because maybe whatever he was supposed to get out, he couldn't. But it happened too prominently on camera two times for it to not have supposed to have been something.
I didn't know, you know, what was going on here. There was also, I mean, we want to talk about like taking liberties with your referees. The amount of times that Aubrey had to turn her back here. I mean, she pretty much auditioned for the G1 here. She first turns her back and misses a Shattered Dreams that Dustin hits a crossroads. Perry kicks out of that. And then Perry stops the final reckoning and Rhodes is sent into the exposed buckle and a DDT onto the cement floor. But Dustin beats the count. He gets in, and as Dustin Rhodes, he goes to move Aubrey out of the way. So Aubrey like gingerly walks to the side of the ring and turns her back as Jack Perry just winds up and kicks him right in the balls. So she misses this. She turns around and Jack hits the running knee strike after Dustin gives him the middle finger, and Perry pins him in 10 minutes and 5 seconds, joining Takeshita and Mark Briscoe in the ladder match.
Mm-hmm. Overall, I felt like it was like, you know, it was a good character showcase type of match for Jack Perry. And like, if the goal is to like make Perry seem that much meaner and sadistic as he heads towards like this blood and guts match in this sort of new main event level role, I thought Dustin was like the perfect opponent to create sympathy for. Dustin always just seems to do a really good job of this, and I certainly think the blood was effective in helping convey like the image of Perry being a bit more of a serious threat. But I wouldn't have done it so early in the match.
Same
like
thing.
You said, John,
especially when you're doing that DDT spot.
Exactly. This happened within the first minute off of like what a shot and like a push into the post. And when that occurs, like rather than sympathy, I just kind of meet that sort of moment happening that early as like it's an AEW wrestler bleeding again. You know, like I'm kind of meeting it with a groan. Instead, like they had perfect opportunities later on in this match to introduce blood with the exposed turnbuckle right there.
Yeah,
like,
you had the buckle spot, you had the cement, you had the DDT on the cement spot. Like these are all big spots that
would have made the injury feel more significant, would have made like both of those spots feel more significant. And I think overall would have just like helped convey a bit more of an easier sort of like build towards like something that should be presented as a big deal, like somebody bleeding. Like I say should. Again, like where you're already combating the feeling of like this sort of being a meaningless thing in AEW. So that I didn't really like. But overall, I am enjoying Perry's trajectory here. You know, like I love that he's teasing the V trigger as a way to just already align him with Kenny Omega in the future. And I am enjoying the character and I'm enjoying the promos.
Yeah, it wasn't a bad match. I just think they could have maximized the drama in this by doing just even the same layout, but just saving the blood for later, because it was a really like well thought out match. The V trigger spot was really well done with the cutoff with the snap power slam, and a Dustin Rhodes match, like he conveys sympathy very effectively, and it was a good role for Jack Perry to go over in.
If you and your team want to cut down on busy work and get more choice and control over accounts payable, you need Bill. Bill Accounts Payable is your secret weapon for saving time on AP. And with a special offer at bill.com/podcast, you'll save money too. With Bill, streamline your entire AP process, including bill creation, approvals, and payments. You can pay with ACH, credit card, check, and international wire transfer. Plus, you can easily integrate with most accounting software. No wonder hundreds of thousands of businesses are already using Bill to manage their AP. Schedule a free demo now to see how Bill can automate your financial operations. And right now, get 15% off when you subscribe to Bill Accounts Payable. There's never been a better time to sign up. This special offer is available for a limited time only at bill.com/podcast. Terms apply. See bill.com/podcast for details.
Renee is with Orange Cassidy, Kyle O'Reilly, and Mark Briscoe. And man, you could not have more of a dichotomy than Kyle O'Reilly speaking, followed by Mark Briscoe.
Oh, man.
First, they're asked about Kyle and Orange Cassidy having a match on Collision, and now they have to team. But Kyle explains, we are pros. We can do this. Orange says that, I think these two have my back, but the person I know has my back is Willow Nightingale, who pops in. And then we go to Mark Briscoe, and this man just cuts like the best promo ever. He says, the word of the day is conglomeration. I am coming for you, Kanonosuke Takeshita. This guy was just amazing. He should be talking every single week on Dynamite, on Collision, on Rampage. It was awesome. Like the everyone was cracking here. Kyle O'Reilly's reactions were hilarious behind him. He is like the... His facial reactions are just something else, but Mark Briscoe was awesome here.
Everybody employed in AEW, for the most part, has something that makes them special. And when we're talking about charisma, it is certainly not the thing that makes either Orange Cassidy nor Kyle O'Reilly special, but it is one of the qualities that Mark Briscoe has over, I would say, almost like, I don't know, 99.9% of this entire locker room. When you're talking about charisma, like, there are very few people, maybe in wrestling, that can like come out with rare appearances and like garner the type of like, I don't know, like affection that he could just simply by speaking in like a 2-minute segment like this. Like, he is so underutilized in AEW, and I know he's the ROH champion, and ROH, like, you know, needs to have like these sort of big names as well. But I think by this point, this guy should have already been a major star. And I don't even know, especially judging by this result, if that's even getting started yet right now.
Before that match, it was Roosh against Dion Roosman, who was billed from Des Moines, and Roosh just kills him, sends him to the floor, runs him into the rail, and then the bull's horns wins in a minute 30. And this was all to set up the post-match, as Roosh continues to attack Roosman and tells the audience to shut up and says that he is a typical American like all of you, weak. And when he goes for another bull's horns, out comes MJF to a big pop in his leather jacket and taped fists. And they have this big brawl, and they're fighting off security together. They go into the crowd. The audience is cheering wildly for MJF. Then they head backstage. Daniels gets between them. MJF lifts and puts him through a table. There's a trash can. I thought this was a very good brawl that the two had. A lot of intensity, and we got the answer to this match. It's going to happen next Wednesday on Dynamite. It's going to start the show and will be commercial-free.
Thank goodness Glacier was here to put a stop to this brawl. Only Glacier, I think, could have been a force powerful enough to hold them.
Is that Ray Lloyd?
Of course. Look, how else could it be?
I thought you were joking, and I didn't even catch that there was Glacier to part the Red Seas here.
Yeah, this was like when they announced Roosh as like MJF's first opponent back. I was like, I didn't feel too good for Roosh, you know, just because I didn't know if it was going to be anything more than a squash match. But like in these couple weeks, like, Roosh has really impressed me. You know, they've turned this into what feels like a pretty substantial match next week. And this doesn't just feel like a throwaway, you know, what will likely be a loss for Roosh. But we can't say for sure. We really can't. But Roosh, I think, has done really well, both like in his intensity, in these sort of like brawls, as well as in his promo, in the little time that he's gotten to speak. So I definitely think like I look at him slightly differently given his performance in this spotlight.
Yeah, and you would think that this should catapult MJF into whatever he's doing on the Forbidden Door show in Long Island. Like, given like how much time they gave to this brawl, that was my thought, was maybe this is going to be the Forbidden Door match, but that will be next week in Virginia. Excalibur announces the match for next week, and then we go to Cassidy, Kyle O'Reilly, and Mark Briscoe against Roderick Strong, Konosuke Takeshita, and Kyle Fletcher, with Don Callis on commentary, Trent Beretta in the corner, and we get dives to the floor from Briscoe, Fletcher, and then a springboard swanton by Orange Cassidy. And he walks right up to Trent, gets in his face, and Trent is backing off as Takeshita comes from behind and drills Cassidy. So they get the advantage on him. And we go to picture in picture, and Taz had some doozies tonight during the breaks, where Don Callis stated that Konosuke Takeshita is the best athlete in AEW. And Taz responds, I don't know about that. I could think of about three guys that are probably better athletes than him in AEW. And then they decide maybe we could get together, Takeshita and these athletes, and they could all do a series of sporting competitions together to determine who is the best athlete in AEW. And Taz thought this would be a cool idea.
So what did they call those? What do you call those in NXT or just in sports?
Oh, a combine?
Combine, yeah. An AEW combine?
The decathlon, maybe, that we can put them through. Well, Daddy Ass, Takeshita, and your other athletes.
Well, what are the sports or what are the tests?
I would want a range. Archery should be one of them. Would that be considered a sport?
Is it a part of decathlon?
This is John Pollock's decathlon, and it is, yes.
Gotcha. Archery. How about an academic decathlon, like in Billy Madison?
Okay, that would be...
I want to see the debate.
That would be... yes, I agree. Yeah. So they come back. This is what you miss if you don't get the picture-in-picture. Kyle gets the tag. He hits a double dragon screw to Fletcher and to Takeshita at the same time. The crowd is red hot for Briscoe when he comes in and hits a senton off the edge to Fletcher, and then there's a leaping DDT off the top by Cassidy onto Fletcher. Takeshita stops a J-Driller hitting a blue thunderbomb. Cassidy hits the satellite DDT to Takeshita, followed by the stun dog on Fletcher. Cassidy and Kyle are double-teaming Fletcher, and we get Kyle Fletcher hitting a turnbuckle brainbuster onto Orange Cassidy. This was not the finish, but because Briscoe makes the blind tag, hits Froggy Bo, Roderick's in for the save, and then Kyle takes out Roderick with a guillotine, and Takeshita lands the power drive knee to Mark Briscoe as Kyle Fletcher finishes Briscoe with a pile driver in 13 minutes and 3 seconds. I thought this match was amazing. This thing was nonstop. You, with the roster they have, you could do a trios match every single week. This to me is what the trios division should be, of just getting your guys that are not in programs that can just do these wild matches, and not to say everyone can do it at this level. Yeah. But this was amazing. Out of it, you probably do have a match here with Mark Briscoe and Kyle Fletcher, whether it's for Death Before Dishonor or sometime then, but you did have Fletcher pinning the ROH champion.
I would certainly hope that was done for a reason, and that, you know, ROH champion isn't just losing for no reason. So what are we getting here? Like a TV title unification, you think?
I don't think they're eliminating any titles in these companies. So maybe it's going to create a new title. That would probably be.
Yeah, just add another thing, and just like we can have a new triple crown in Ring of Honor.
But really, that's a long way away, that ROH pay-per-view. But this could be the start of it. Like, sure. I wouldn't have pinned Mark Briscoe for no reason. So I would think that at least you're going to get this match at some point.
Yeah, really good match, as you would expect from, you know, a field of guys this talented. There are no weak links in this group, and there are very few weak links in the AEW, at least, like, you know, TV roster in general. Everybody brings something special to the table. But again, somebody like Mark Briscoe always happens to make a huge impression just because of the amount of charisma he has over everybody. So Kyle looked great. Fletcher looked amazing. Honestly, it just everybody looked good here.
It was a great, great match. Trent goes after Cassidy while the others are attacking Briscoe. So then Willow's music plays, but as she's coming out, Statlander attacks her at the entrance, and Hathaway tells her to wake up. And next time, we won't be dragging you onto the stage. We'll be dragging you to the ER, and takes a photo of her. And then they posted it online afterward. And, you know, we talked about the idea of doing an intergender match, but I think the mixed tag seems to be almost a lock at this point, the way they are pairing Orange Cassidy with Willow for our match with Trent and Chris Statlander.
That looks to be the case. Otherwise, like, I don't know if we've seen this much integration with like Willow vowing to defend Orange Cassidy as much as she has. So so what's the program there? Trent and Stat versus Willow and Orange? Now, that doesn't feel like Forbidden Door to me. Like,
well, Cassidy's got the match now with Zack Sabre Jr. at the pay-per-view. I would designate this for TV. I think this would be like this would be a good TV match to do it.
Well, why wouldn't Zach bring somebody in, joining on the fun?
Okay, he could.
Yeah,
I hope we do get a Zach promo on TV in person at some point before Forbidden Door. Renee is in the locker room where Phoenix is working out in the back. This was a very UFC inspired spot here, and just goes over Phoenix's past title wins, and he knows how good Will Ospreay is, but he is one of one.
He is.
And we had a video from Shingo Takagi, man of very few words. He is the never open weight champion, and I'm ready for the Owen Hart tournament. That's all I wanted to say.
And that's all he needs to say.
That's like, it.
I don't need anything more from this guy other than his commitment to come over and wrestle some matches on AEW.
Like, so,
Just
to keep track now, this tournament now features Shingo Takagi, Bryan Danielson, and Pac, who we will get later on. So
amazing.
This tournament is shaping up very, very, very well.
Part of me just almost wishes they could make this round robin. So like we'd be guaranteed, you know, the mix of matches between the field.
Here's the question. Maybe we will see this because Bryan Danielson is in a 8-man tag on Collision, and it involves TMDK, who are now both the IWGP and Strong Tag Champions. So I could see them setting up a tag title match out of that 8-man on Saturday. But the idea of having Danielson and Shingo Takagi have their first round match at Forbidden Door.
Amazing.
That to me would be the time to do it is that because so Danielson does not have anything lined up yet. I would just do the first round match at Forbidden Door.
That is to me a pay-per-view level match. Like if you're trying to appeal to like a dream match type of feeling, that would certainly nail it. But you know, Shingo being involved in this Owen tournament, like gives me hope that the G1 may have an AEW contribution of a similar star level power. You know, I mean, yes, one is, you know, a month long versus like a set of dates for Shingo. But still, you can hope, can't you?
Well, we'll find out this Sunday. Then Christopher Daniels announces a pair of eliminator matches for next week. Both the Young Bucks and Kazuchika Okada will have separate matches, eliminators, and that the Bucks, they will also not have any interference or seconds allowed at ringside, which is par for the course for Okada with the Continental Championship.
All the other matches, you know, whatever, like if your seconds can interrupt, like it doesn't matter. But yeah, this one, especially Tony Khan demands it.
Yes, you have the power to eliminate interference based on Christopher Daniels' rulings. Hook and Samoa Joe against Tony Nese and Aria Davari. So the new gimmick is that Katsuyori Shibata is the highest paid camera operator in AEW who just films these guys. And this is how they have gotten away with the invisible camera. And they have just made Shibata the cameraman. He is their Brandon Cutler.
It is very amusing seeing Katsuyori Shibata hold a camera.
Like when they showed him, I thought they would have him with like a phone or something. No, he's got the big camera.
Oh, yeah, yeah.
It was something else.
Well, I thought for sure like they were just calling him like the actual camera. They have a professional cameraman doing it, but then they just say, they just called him Shibata. Turns out it was actually Shibata filming all of this.
So yeah. Shibata's filming them, and Joe is trying to find out from Hook why Taz likes the color orange so much. He's like, it's because of Syracuse, right? Who are the orange men. And I couldn't even make out Hook's response here. It was very muffled.
Couldn't hear it. Well, but I think Hook said Taz hates Syracuse.
Oh, he hates Syracuse. Okay. Yeah. I knew it was probably something along those lines. So then they follow them out into the arena and they jump Tony Nese and Davari on the stage and take them into the ring. And we just get them annihilating Nese, and then they briefly get the advantage on Hook, and then Hook does his version of the walk-off as Davari leaps off the top. We see Shibata just walk up and destroy Mark Sterling unprovoked. Joe applies a coquina from the apron while Hook applies red rum. Davari taps, and Shibata has the rear naked choke applied to Mark Sterling. This went all of 2 minutes and 30 seconds.
And the crowd was lit up for those entire 2 minutes and 30 seconds. Like, this trio is already over. You know, they've really honed in on something that I think clearly works for them. Like, get in, choke them, and get out. Like, it's short and sweet, and the crowd was up for the entire thing. This is something new that is clearly working.
This is such a weird alliance. Yeah. And the ingredient that makes it all work is Joe. He just is.
Joe is the only talker of them all.
Yeah. He's the only talker, but he's also the guy that you can virtually put in any role in this company. And this is an example. Like,
hold on a second. Could you put Joe in the learning tree?
I would be curious to see him.
Maybe he would make that work too.
But this guy's gone from the badass world champion to now, like the mentor that's doing like comedy stuff. And it's not that much of an adjustment. Like, he's still, I don't know. It's working, and Hook needs something like this.
Sequoia Joe.
Oh, man.
About it.
Boy, I'm a horrible influence, but that is very good. We had a video of Stephanie Vaucour and states that Monet believing that this is her title. Your arrogance is offensive, and this belt isn't going anywhere. She will leave with both belts. Another week with a lot of video packages they're going heavy on for Forbidden Door, which has been a criticism in the past, and you cannot say that this year. They are focusing on a lot of the non-regulars in AEW that are on this pay-per-view.
I totally agree. I'm getting a much bigger feeling of presence by the non-AEW wrestlers that are on the card this year, and it's thanks to videos like this. Great production on this one, as in previous weeks with like Monet's videos. I think, you know, you have to commend her because they could have just had her speak in Spanish for a promo like this, but she did it all in English. I thought she did well with the script, and I thought the editing made it come together very professionally. So I've been really, really enjoying these builds.
So Mercedes is defending the TBS championship against Zeuxis, and Zeuxis early on hits this tope suicida and just goes like head first into Monet onto the floor. And we see a Romero special that Monet then reverses, getting her own version. And so we go to picture in picture. It's story time with Taz. And as Zeuxis is, I guess, grabbing at the face of Monet, Taz explains that one time in Puerto Rico, he was wrestling a guy and he took his fingernail and he ended up cutting Taz's gum with the fingernail, and Taz had to get a tetanus shot down in San Juan.
NordVPN.com/postwrestling. This is why you should sign up. Yes.
I'm here to recap. Okay. I'm just trying to give everyone the story that was told to me. There was a bulldog counter from Monet, and then the knees in the corner. She hits the Meteora 1-2 Soho from Mercedes here, as Taz even look at her facial reaction to that one. She was not.
Everybody gets one
out there.
Everyone gets one.
She goes for the three amigos. Zeuxis stops the last one and does a double underhook into a lung blower. And then Monet flips over Zeuxis and lands on her feet, hitting the moneymaker to win in 10 minutes and 9 seconds. There was one spot in here where Zeuxis went for this running knee strike, and they so mistimed this, where Monet went to like eat it, and it was, and she pulled up on the knee. I did think this one did have some like timing issues within it, but what did you think overall of the match?
There were certainly maybe blemishes, but I thought it was overall a good match. And when I'm maybe especially watching these type of Monet matches, like, I'm more so listening to the crowd reactions throughout, and they gave her a superstar crowd reaction throughout. But like the end result to me was like a really good prelude to the Stephanie Vaucour match. I really like the matchmaking here. You know, Zeuxis is Vaucour's tag partner, and it makes perfect sense booking wise. It's the type of cold introduction that really does not need any other introduction. The story kind of wrote itself, and I thought she like put up a really good obstacle for Monet. Like, she kind of beat up Monet pretty badly, you know, throughout the duration of the match, and it made Monet's win feel that much more significant than just a squash match.
So they explain that Mercedes is now in the clear until Forbidden Door. Now Stephanie Vaucour has to do her part by facing La Catalina this Friday at Arena Mexico, meaning that Excalibur promoted as many matches for CMLL on Friday night as they did Rampage on Friday night.
Right. Yeah. Well, which show is more important to the overall story of Forbidden Door, I guess?
I'm just stating that tonight was coming off that number for Rampage. If you thought that there was any concern, they did not change things at all. They promoted one match for Rampage, and
I think if there was any concern, they would have made those changes like years ago. You know, the Rampage has just sort of continued to exist at this level that they seem to be happy with. I mean, I don't exactly know how much money they're getting for it, but like maybe they feel like it's a.
I mean, you are in the midst of a renewal, and you're just coming. Yeah. Like the thing is, they promote the one match. It's like you're about to tape all these matches, like momentarily. Like you know what this hour consists of, and
but are they attractive matches?
Well, then that's the problem. Like, I mean, it's I don't know. It's obviously it's not a priority, I think it should be. I'm not saying you blow the doors down for Rampage, but I think a little more than it's Alex Windsor and Tony Storm. That's your hook for Friday.
No, I don't disagree. But it's hard for me to kind of like understand what the purpose and like sort of the philosophy is of Rampage even existing, other than like, you know, collecting a certain amount of money. But clearly they don't want to like put their best matches on the thing that they're probably not making the most money off of.
Next video was Mina Shirakawa, and Mariah May voices this video and goes over the titles that she won at Stardom, and that Mina Shirakawa, she's always been sexy. And then they talk about their time in Club Venus, and now Mina Shirakawa has come to America to take over.
Yeah, this came online pretty like earlier this week. I thought it was great. Like Mina Shirakawa is unbelievably charismatic. I'm sure in Japanese, but like in English, she translates like excellently. The editing in this one I thought was fantastic as well. This is the type of video that I think we've been needing for any of like throughout the entirety of her appearances on AEW. And I can understand like wanting to delay this until you're getting closer to Forbidden Door. But man, some of those earlier appearances where she just kind of showed up and like started making out with Mina, with Mariah May, could have really used a bit of bit more visual background like this. It's all to say, like, obviously they're handicapped with like how often she could come over to in order to tell those crossover stories. But I'm just glad we got it now, because I think it allows you to enjoy the rest of the story that much more, knowing exactly what their relationship was.
And then they cut to Renee with Tony Storm, Mariah May, and Luther. And May thanks Tony for putting her into the Owen Hart tournament. She is excited. Mina Shirakawa is returning next week. And Mina Shirakawa wants to do what every Japanese wrestler coming to America wants to do, a contract signing. And they will have one with Mariah May hosting it next week. And then Tony is off for her wax after they promote that she will face Alex Windsor on Friday night on Rampage, which as we went off the air, we assume is taking up the entire 60 minutes of the show on Friday.
Oh, could be an Iron Woman match. Yeah,
it's a timeless match.
Very good. Yeah, I thought Tony was great here. Mariah May was great here. Like, this feels like it's a story that's really kicking off now. And I think it's making me enjoy all of these performances that much more. So it already, to me, feels like a pretty hot match heading to Forbidden Door.
And then it was time for TV time. Big Bill is in the ring and explains that it's never too late to start learning and never too early to start winning. And he introduces the Socrates of pro wrestling, the guru of giving back, and the Michael Jordan of Michael Jordans, Chris Jericho. I don't know what that means.
Yeah. I mean, there are several Michael Jordans. So I guess of Michael B. Jordan and Michael Jordan, Chris Jericho is the Michael Jordan.
Okay, I'll give you that one. That's true.
But they're both pretty great. I guess that's what he means. Yeah.
Jericho, once again, promotes that 15 minutes ago he released this new shirt, which is now one of the most fastest selling shirts in AEW history, and does who wants the shirt, who wants the shirt, and casually just puts it right down and doesn't give it to anyone, and then shouts out Des Moines and says he was eating corn earlier today. I was like, okay, where are we going with this? And he explains, he gives advice on how to farm corn using the specific pH level, and that your pH level, it doesn't work for me, brother. So, and these are words that actually came out of a pro wrestler's mouth on a pro wrestling program in 2024. Next time, please fortify your soil with more compost if you want to make good corn. And Brian Keith comes in. If you want to grow good lame-ass corn, you better respect Chris Jericho. This, I enjoyed this, okay? I thought this was very entertaining, okay? Between that line about the pH levels and Brian Keith coming back. And then Jericho introduces the little youngsters that could use some advice. private party. So Vardy comes out and they're doing their whole shots. And Jericho says, well, you better need a designated driver if you're going to do some shots. And you guys have been doing some great things, but you haven't been winning matches because your basics aren't up to snuff. I was trained by Stu Hart, or at least some of his sons, who I went to their training camp for. And you guys don't even climb the top rope properly. So Cassidy says, can you please show us? As they call Jericho the Caitlin Clark of AEW. And Jericho goes to demonstrate how to climb a turnbuckle just like Owen Hart did. And he climbs up, and then Cassidy wants to show them something and knocks Jericho off the buckle. They hit dives onto Bill and Brian Keith, and then a swanton and shooting star press by Private Party onto Chris Jericho. These segments are so weird. This thing is, I don't know what to make of it. There are some that I think have just been dreadful. This was not one of them, though. I found this to be pretty entertaining, and there will be some time that there will be some audiences that I think really do get into this weird delivery that Jericho has of it. But the material has been hit and miss along the way. But I did find this to be a pretty entertaining segment.
Yeah, that's a very different reaction from what you gave the Jericho segments last week.
I hated last week's. I've been up and down on these segments. Like some have. I found them intriguing. I don't know if this is really, it's a separate question. If you can argue of where Jericho is in terms of is this a main event level character for a guy that is making
meant to be, or at least not yet.
Well, that's the issue, is that is this worth the amount of investment in a Chris Jericho?
That's not really fair though to ask, right? Like was Sting a main event level act? You know, I don't exactly know how much he was making compared to what a Chris Jericho was making, but
I think that Sting was still somebody that was very well protected. It remains to be seen where this character is in terms of its value. But no. All I'm saying, this is a, this is a very significant investment you have in this guy.
And I think they're trying their best to realize that investment by coming up with something that the audience is reacting to. And good or bad, the audience is reacting to this. You know, these are memorable segments. This is now becoming a unique, memorable character that I think leaves as some lasting impression. And I think it's risky, and I think it's meant to be divisive. Now, the question is, is he about to accomplish the turnaround, where we hate it all so much, we hate it, and then we hate it so much we somehow start to like it because he continues to commit to it so much. For some people, and I think it depends on the segment too, but for this week, at least judging by, my podcasting partner here and some of the reaction in the chat room, seems to be a pretty positive reaction. I didn't have that same reaction. I mean, I think I'm still probably reacting to the other intended reaction, and that's of just dislike and not wanting to see that much more of it. But I agree that it is memorable. I do have concerns though about what it means for somebody like a Big Bill, who the more he kind of sticks around in this sort of realm, the less I think about the monster that I think he so effectively created with Ricky Starks. And I worry this sort of comedic gimmick, it's not just something you can, switch away from and be the monster again after you're done with this, look at, an Otis that I think they're just starting to, climb out of at this moment. So I do hope that he gets over enough with this Jericho thing that he could still be a big presence on the show, and it's not just something where he gets forgotten about. But I will say, I think for Brian Keith, this entire thing has been a win. He's been absolutely great in all of these segments.
I think Big Bill needs to start using a tree slam. I think that's the first step.
That's the difference maker.
Maybe that's the turn on Chris Jericho. That's how he eventually snaps. Pardon the pun. Then there was a recap of the setup for Jon Moxley and Tetsuya Naito coming out of Dominion. No Moxley on this show, though, but we'll be on Collision. The Bang Bang Gang is minus Jay White tonight. He was the cardboard cutout, and they cut a promo mocking the House of Black, turning out the lights, and issuing a challenge for Saturday on the one-year anniversary of Collision. And Juice Robinson tried his best to get to Mark Briscoe levels here. Didn't quite make it, but through no lack of trying.
No, not at all. Yeah, I think he has that within him. You know, I'm certainly happy to see Juice back. Do you see a title change happening?
So when the graphic came up, they did not list this as a title match. They just listed it as a trios match. So I don't think the titles are on the line.
Oh, okay. So never mind.
I think that's a way that...
I mean, there are rankings. Can... There are rankings they have to respect, right?
Well, this is the way House of Black can win, and they don't win the titles.
Gotcha.
Daniel Garcia against Nick Comoroto, college alumni of some listener. Matt Menard is on commentary.
What do you mean?
Nick Comoroto, he was a school colleague of one, Brandon from New Jersey, as I recall.
I didn't know that.
He's told us this, I think. I think it goes in one ear and out the other for you. But yeah, this is the return of Nick Comoroto, making his 2024 Dynamite debut, according to this graphic. It was not long. Daniel Garcia came out and won quickly with a guillotine into an impaler DDT in a minute 11. And during the match, they showed Will Ospreay watching from the back, as well as MJF, who was icing his hand.
Yeah, MJF watching suggests that they're building to something between the two. Was there any lead up to it that I'm forgetting about?
Maybe he was scouting Nick Comoroto.
Maybe.
That New York connection.
You could be right. That doesn't sound so silly. But I was going to suggest, could it be MJF? Like, MJF Garcia doesn't feel big enough for a Forbidden Door, nor does it thematically work. But that could be a match, I guess, you know.
After the Battle of New York.
Buffalo versus Long Island, yeah. Mm-hmm. They're doing Garcia versus Ospreay before that, too, at some point.
Most likely. Again, yeah. In 2 weeks, they're in Buffalo as well. So you would think that Garcia is prime for something significant on that show. And Renee speaks to Ospreay and how his body is holding up. He said, I'd love to speak about how great Daniel Garcia is, but I've got to focus on Phoenix and I've got Forbidden Door coming up. And he has the contract for the match with Swerve as he goes to head out. But we come back from break and there is Pac. He talks about what a terrible return he has had to AEW. Suffering loss after loss. I was supposed to be a bastard, but I feel like a bitch. And he says that that ends now. He is done with apathy. He's at his best when he is angry. You see, the man's been getting too happy, too giddy there. So he's going to be angry now. And he is entering the Owen Hart Cup. He's going to go to Wembley Stadium. This will be my redemption story. And bang, bang, gang, Death Triangle has not forgotten because we don't forget. Just a terrific promo from this guy.
It was a very good Pac promo. Yeah.
What does that mean? That seems
okay.
Really good promo for Pac.
I'm saying he's got one type of promo. And he's great at it. But part of me kind of wants to see him I don't know, drive in a car with Orange Cassidy and see what that results in. I'm not sure what I mean. I love Pac. I think in ring he's great. But I just think there needs to be some depth to what we see every week. It's this type of promo. And again, it's great. But I'm not really kind of latched on to anything regarding Pac story-wise.
So here's our lineup. We've got Tony Storm and Alex Windsor on Rampage. Collision, the one-year anniversary show, features Christian Cage's Father's Day special, the BCC, all four of them, against Shane Haste, Mikey Nicholls, Leo Rush, and Rocky Romero. Mm-hmm. So you're going to have Leo Rush in there with Brian Danielson. You're going to have my favorite combination in wrestling right now, Leo Rush and Claudio Castagnoli. Mm. And you have Leo Rush and John Moxley and Yuta.
That sounds great.
And then the Bang Bang Gang against the House of Black. Dynamite next week has MJF against Rush. Young Bucks against the Acclaimed, and they never announced the opponent for Kazuchika Okada, but he has an eliminator as well. And we've got the contract signing with Tony Storm and Mina Shirakawa. And they announce July 24th will be Blood and Guts at the Bridgestone Arena, a superb venue in Nashville, Tennessee.
Nashville, all right.
So okay. They're setting this one up well in advance.
Yeah, as they should. Mm-hmm. Does it interest you that it seems would you assume the Acclaimed would be on the team with Swerve or no? Or is that just a setup for the tag match?
I feel this is probably setting up the Acclaimed to get a tag title shot.
Okay.
Before then.
And you wouldn't put him on Team AEW. Like, who would you put on Team AEW with?
I would want some of my main eventers. I mean, you are coming off Anarchy in the Arena. I don't know if you want to do a straight replication.
Well, you don't have FTR. Yeah.
You don't have FTR, that's right. And I think you'll have Swerve leading the AEW contingent. Mm-hmm. Like, he did the promo already about Anarchy in the Arena, that next time, call me. So I think you'll have Swerve and... I mean, it's possible you could have a Danielson or a Moxley in there, but it's possible you could have Swerve, and you have like the mutual respect with Will Ospreay coming out of Forbidden Door. Like, Ospreay could be in this.
I kind of feel like you need Darby if Darby's healthy. I mean, they hung the dude up and like treated him, like beat him up pretty bad. I think Darby kind of needs his redemption.
Well, it's 6 weeks away, so they have plenty of time for Darby to rehabilitate himself in that time.
Yeah, recover from another bus crash in that time.
And the final match is Will Ospreay and Rey Fénix. They go over their history. Will Ospreay is 3-0 in their past singles matches, but this is their first one-on-one match since 2019. And Ospreay hands off the contract to Swerve, who is seated in the front row. And Tony Schiavone tells everybody, don't worry, we've got an overrun. And we start things off. It really picks up when Fénix goes for a super Rana and Ospreay lands on his feet and the crowd goes nuts. And you've got Excalibur telling him, it brings me back to Battle of Los Angeles 2016 when they first met. And they trade big kicks. Fénix ducks a hidden blade, and then there's the Kawada kicks, a chop to Fénix, and then Fénix gets the octopus applied, turns it into a crucifix bomb, and then Fénix goes for this backflip off of the turnbuckle. And the idea was to flip over Ospreay into a bridging German, but didn't quite land it, nor could he bridge, but they covered it with the leg injury that he's dealing with. So Ospreay gets up, a pair of attempts, lands the Os Cutter on the second try, and then he goes for a hidden blade, but it's caught with another Hurricane Rana from Fénix. And we see a somersault rolled into a hidden blade when Ospreay stares at Swerve from the top turnbuckle, signals, this is my house, and he hits the Swerve stomp to Rey Fénix before hitting the hidden blade and wins in 15 minutes, 12 seconds before Swerve enters the ring. But what did you think about the matchway?
I thought it was a really, really excellent match, as I think you might have predicted. Maybe not to the level of potential match that these two could have on pay-per-view, but I think like relatively like a very appropriate, I should say, for a TV showcase. Both guys incredibly athletic and so precise, like two of the most proficient high flyers in the world, and I would say satisfied like in that regard.
It was a very good match. This certainly was not at the level of like if they were out there for 20 minutes on a pay-per-view, but I thought this was really strong, and you could see the increase in tempo by the midway point where they were building to a lot of their big stuff and getting the most out of it. A very strong match from them. Swerve gets into the ring and says that I'm not playing with you. It's your career that you are playing with, and you're still an immature little child, and you're not strong enough to hold both belts. So with that, Ospreay yanks Swerve's title, and he ends up putting both belts onto his shoulders, telling Swerve, this feels pretty comfortable holding both. And Swerve grabs his title back, and then into Will's ear says, and this was shot really well, you were right in their mm-hmm. face, you're lucky we're still friends, because anybody else who did this, I'd put them in the grave. It's a great line to end the show with. I thought this was really strong how they built up Swerve and Ospreay on this show.
I agree. I thought Swerve especially was excellent here. Like, this was the type of what we were talking about earlier, you know, mean movie villain type of Swerve that you want, even as a babyface here. You know, you just want the attitude and you want the edge in him, even if he's, you know, supposed to, like, he is still a good guy. But he just has like that much more. He's just that much more interesting. Like this, I agree, felt like a scene straight out of a movie. Like this is the type of in-ring, you know, acting type of segment that you'd expect at this point more out of the WWE than AEW. And that's not supposed to be like an insult. That's a compliment, because I really admire WWE's like level of production when they're able to achieve something like this. Like, it looks simple, but it actually requires like a strong level of restraint and not having the commentators talk too much in the blocking, in the audio mix, for all of this to come across. And I thought it all came across perfectly, including the shot of Ospreay with the two championship belts, all of it done really well. And as a closing segment to build to the main event of Forbidden Door, I think it successfully drew more doubt towards the outcome and made me more interested in the match.
Yeah. I thought the two big matches on the show were this and the six man that they had earlier on, but my biggest takeaway from the show, and this is something that I personally have found that AEW really for the last year, and you can look at this with like the addition of Mike Mansoori and changes to the product, where we have gone from the AEW of its early years and then present, like you can see that change. And to me, this was an episode where it felt like it was much more in sync in terms of you were delivering like your in-ring match quality. We were heavy on videos, production pieces, a lot of the things that people have been complaining about, but it's very hard. It's almost like you go too much one way, you're going to upset the existing fan base. You go too much there and you have the complaints of, who are these people? What's this, like all of this? I felt this was a really well-balanced show. I would say by the end of it was my interest in Forbidden Door enhanced. I would say yes. I think they've really drilled down on stories throughout most of the matches. You got a number of like future events that you're building from Blood and Guts to the Owen Hart tournament. You've got everyone's eye, like, as long as you have someone mentioning Wembley every week, I think that's going to pay dividends. That is the ultimate focus. That is their WrestleMania that you have, guys. That is what the whole Owen is directed toward. So I have to say, for like a pro wrestling show, I thought that they did a very good job with like a wide variety of stuff, like a good angle with Roosh and MJF to build that up for next week. Outside of Rampage, they built everything like really well coming out of this.
Listen, to everything you just listed that they had to push, you know, the Owen Hart Cup, Forbidden Door, like collisions.
I know there's a lot. And I wouldn't say like at the end of it, like my head was not spinning by all these different like balls in the air. Mm-hmm. Like I did feel like they did, like they paced it out, and I was not confused by the end of this.
And something does have to give when you're trying to put that much, you know, attention to everything that they have. Even if they gave you a whole Rampage card, would you have really remembered it or felt that much anticipation for it?
If they gave you something of significance, like a big match.
The biggest thing that they gave you, I guess, was Toni Storm versus Alex Windsor. We'll see if there's anything more important than that on the show. But I agree that, like, I think a lot of the changes for AEW are positive. And, like, as far as, like, getting away from what AEW was, well, what exactly was AEW? Why do we all watch AEW? What made you attracted to this promotion? It's good wrestling. As long as they deliver good wrestling with great wrestlers, they can do anything else, and I think it's perfectly fine. My one negative on the show is maybe their usage of Christopher Daniels as a GM. I thought like he just kind of overstepped his, they over relied on that a little bit here. I don't think he needs to be as loud of a personality for the type of role that he's used. I understand he's a substitute for Tony Khan. Let him appear like as infrequently as Tony Khan did, or when he does, just have him come out, deliver a message, and get out. He doesn't need to do much more than that. And that is where, like, I feel like maybe the WWE influence might be a bit harmful. But otherwise, like, I thought that this was a good cohesive show. And as far as a build to Forbidden Door, I think it's going really well this year.
All right, those are our thoughts on Dynamite. And we will now head on over. If you want to submit a super chat, have at it, and we will go to the forum.
Let's go to forum.postwrestling.com, where all of our Post Wrestling Cafe patrons can leave feedback by logging into the forum. You want to start things off, John?
We go to Bruce Lord, who was our Espresso executive producer last week, who was able to get us the juxtaposition of Katsuyori Shibata against Tomohiro Ishii last week and then transformed to modern-day camera operator Katsuyori Shibata, all within a
That's
week.
That's right. Yes.
So Bruce writes, a much more enjoyable Dynamite than last week's, but more than the main event or match announcements, it's nice to have a sense of what's coming next Saturday and Wednesday again. What stuck out to me was how much work the trios match, in addition to Briscoe's promo and the post-match angle, did for everyone involved. There's a lot of talk about the AEW mid-card getting lost in the shuffle, but I think that ad hoc matches like this with Briscoe connecting the dots show how easy it can be to keep the mid-card programs moving in an organic way. Something as simple as Briscoe being fired up to tag with O'Reilly and Cassidy, and then adding the Statlander Willow business at the end created a real sense of fluidity and naturalism in the mid-card, which would have been lost with a whole bunch of smash cuts to different pre-tapes siloing each program off. Also, on a card with an Ospreay Phoenix match, points to Takeshita's use of Cassidy as a weapon and Zeuxis's insane underhook lung blower as being standout moments.
Mm-hmm. Thank you very much, Bruce, for that. You can hear Bruce's thoughts on New Japan Pro Wrestling's Dominion show that just took place this past weekend. That's in the Post Wrestling Cafe right now with the K Karen Peterson. Let's go to Brian from New Jersey, who says, I think it's shaping up to be an awesome summer for AEW between Forbidden Door, a men's Owen Hart Cup tournament that now has Brian Danielson, Pac, and Shingo Takagi, and the possibilities for All In 24. As for tonight, I thought it had a lot of good wrestling highlighted by the main event in the trios match and strong booking and ending segments for Swerve. I also think I'm going to love the Joe Hook Shibata group. The Learning Tree is firmly an undercard act, but it's a guilty pleasure. I've been more hot than cold on the Elite as a TV act, Christopher Daniels' role included, channeling the best and worst of the Attitude Era, but I like them positioning this year's Blood and Guts match as an open challenge. If it has to be 5-on-5, does this mean Hangman Adam Page joins the Elite?
Yeah, that's certainly another one. Like, this is all going to be dependent, too, on, like,
Fire him? Yes. Was he suspended or was he suspended? Kenny was fired.
Yeah, you're right. He was, there was that whole, writing off of Hangman right in concert with, Kenny Omega. But yeah, I mean, once you have some of these guys that are ready to come back, like, those are some options that you have, like, Hangman's another.
I could see Hangman on either side, you know, he could join the Elite, but teaming with Swerve, I think, makes a lot of, storyline sense right now as well. Let's go to, I mean, as much sense as it would make for somebody who threatened to kidnap your child, but
water under the bridge.
Yeah, well, they bled together. Muggin says, you want me to do this one?
Sure.
Okay. Muggin says a well-balanced outing with each of the key four matches delivering and some squashes sprinkled in between. Ospreay and Phoenix was the clear standout, and the Owen Cup looks pretty loaded from Danielson to Pac and now Shingo Takagi. Collision's anniversary episode looks good on paper. I bet Christian's Father's Day celebration is going to end in tragedy. I bet it's time for a refresh. What does that mean? What could that mean?
I don't know. I don't know. That's very ominous from Muggin, but he usually does come across as ominous, but there you go. That should have been Excalibur's read for a collision.
Do you see any changes in the lineup in the patriarchy? I'm assuming that's what Muggin's alluding to. Like, can you see either Luchasaurus or Nick Wayne stepping out?
I guess, I think it should be
that big of a segment. Like, by this point, Christian has had, like, a world title challenge on a pay-per-view. What more do, you know, like, I guess he could probably do more, but, like, I think the group it might be due for a refresh.
Well, it certainly does not have to be as soon as this Saturday, and you have months until this is going to be something to address, but you do have to do the tag run, the Elite, like the reunion of Copeland and Christian, like, mm-hmm. you do have to get to that at some point. And when all of a sudden Adam Copeland, like, breaks his leg and is out for that many months, you realize that, you know, we are dealing with, like, a smaller window of, like, how long these guys are going to have that chance to do it. And, you know, you do want to get that run in before, you know, another injury potentially occurs, or you just don't have the option to be able to execute that, because that you can get a brief run out of that. And to do a Young Bucks Copeland cage match on pay-per-view, like, you could get, like, a semi run out of that before at some point when you're ready to turn cage babyface.
Could be a while from now.
It could be a while. It's not going to be in the immediate future, but coming up in the very near future is the Ask Away Mailbag Show. Again, you can head to forum.postwrestling.com, get your questions in by Thursday afternoon, or head on over to memo.fm/postwrestling. We will be taking all of your questions. That show comes out Friday. Again, MCU Later dropping Thursday. We'll have both Ask Away and Rewind to SmackDown on Friday, and then Clash at the Castle on Saturday, Collision Course Saturday night, and the NWA podcast Sunday night, rounding out the week at postwrestling.com. And of course, one more time, the cash-in going down on Saturday, July the 6th. Pick up your tickets at postwrestling.com/live. We will see all of you there, 2 p.m. Eastern time, including the State of the Wrestling Media panel and all the other events that we have going down hours before Money in the Bank. So that is it for us, and thank you for tuning in for another edition of Rewind to Dynamite.